the home of Jerry Soroka, Atrium House in Pittsburgh, for the National Council of Jewish Women. The interviewers are Howard Braun and Selma Rice. Say a word. The date today is August the 26th, 1993. Jerry, today we're going to watch the vignettes, the stories, and the people, good and bad, that you might be able to tell us a little bit about. And so I'll just start back in Cleveland for a moment. Did you actually know Rabbis Silver and Lilienfeld? And is there anything beside their ferocity you could tell us about? Well, let's see. They were two different kinds of people. both very, very involved in Jewish things. Lilienfeld was the pure Zionist, as you know, and one of the originators of the whole philosophy of the United States. And he was a force to be reckoned with in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. He had the most prestigious temple. It's interesting. The name of his temple was The Temple. Mm-hmm. An indication of how they looked upon him. And he, while he would never, let's say, come to board meetings or something like that, he was always available for consultation. And everybody knew where he stood. Very pro-Israel, pro-Zionist, but did not involve himself in the policy-making decisions of the Federation. Mm-hmm. The Lilienfeld, on the other hand, was much more of an activist.
Well, you're talking about Silver then, first.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was referring to The Temple, that was Silver.
The Temple.
That's The Temple.
Yeah. That's the one near the museum.
That is correct.
Yeah, correct.
Something like something rose or a flower or something like that. And it was in the heart of the black area.
Yeah.
But they never moved it. I don't know if it's
still there.
Rabbi Lilienfeld, on the other hand, was much more of an activist. For example, he was. You're talking about a relationship. If we needed something special, if we needed somebody to make a speech, if we needed somebody like that, Rabbi Silver was always, Rabbi Hillel Silver was always available.
Well, Rabbi Lilienfeld.
I'm talking about Silver. I'm talking about relationships.
Yeah,
I switched back.
Yeah, right. Okay.
I was just talking about relationships. Rabbi Silver was always available for meetings, for speech, whatever. Lilienfeld was much more of an activist. He was the national president of the American Jewish Congress for a while. He was also campaign chairman, so I had a very close sort of working relationship with Rabbi Lilienfeld. And that was unusual in those days to have a rabbi as the chairman of there was an interesting bit on Rabbi Lilienfeld. He was married to a gal who was a Shakespearean expert. Highly intellectual lady, top. And all of a sudden, it seems that he was seen squiring another lady in various quiet restaurants and so forth. And this became a co-celebra. Half of the board wanted him to resign, but you know, he was acting in a way that a rabbi shouldn't. The other half fought for him. Finally, there was a meeting of the entire membership. There was about 1,000 people at the temple in which he explained his point of view. And lo and behold, he prevailed. A strong person. His new wife became much more of a Rebbetzin than his previous wife, and it worked out finally. So So that was, we talked about relationships. So we worked very closely together, you know, meetings, and strategy, and so forth. And good friends. And so he was a good community person. Both of them, very good community. Three of them was very fortunate. Highly unusual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to get two people of that quality.
Yeah.
And to be helpful.
Right. And of course, between those two temples, mm-hmm. The other temple was Park Synagogue. Mm-hmm. That was Leonard Ratner's family's synagogue.
Mm-hmm.
Conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Armand Cohen. He was a little more of a rebel. Strong Zionist, but pro-education.
What's his name?
Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, Cohen, C-O-E-T-N. So there we have a few the difficulties with him in terms of Jewish education and so forth. And Leonard Ratner would be the intermediary most of the time, but there was not nothing
mm-hmm.
earth-shaking. But between those three temples, mm-hmm. they controlled most of the wealth
mm-hmm.
in the community. And we never had any fights like they did, like they did here in Pittsburgh in the early years.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, Cleveland was the top fundraising community in the United mm-hmm. States for many, many years, and it's very close to the top now.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, I think I talked about the fact that in Cleveland, all the wealthy people, no matter how they felt, German Jews, Russian mm-hmm. Jews, Polish Jews, they fought with each other, but always within the framework of the Federation. Like Howard Messenmal was a tremendous liberal. Some of these guys were strong Zionists, but not very liberal. But he fought with them inside the Federation.
Mm-hmm.
He never changed his spots, Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Played tennis with him on his tennis court. He was a wonderful guy.
Well, let's switch to Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And I'll ask you about rabbis in Pittsburgh whom you may have known and had any interesting effect, either personal or community or federation.
My relationship with the rabbis in Pittsburgh was, shall I say, neutral. Not overly involved. I was a member of Rosh Hashanah, but I was first a member of the Temple Emmanuel because I lived in Mount Lebanon. But I was close to the rabbi in Mount Lebanon, who since was somewhere in Connecticut, or was very big temple that I didn't remember. Mm-hmm. What was the name of the rabbi in Mount Lebanon, Alma, where we were members? Emmanuel? I can't, the first guy. Well, in any event, we were close there. My son was confirmed. In Emmanuel. Harold Silver.
That's right.
There was a distant mm-hmm. relationship to Albert Harold Silver.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he wanted the pulpit here in Cleveland, but he didn't get it, so he got a very big post up in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I was around during the big fight at Rhode Island over whether or not they should hire either Howard Silver or eventually they hired
Jacobs.
Mm-hmm. And as you know, the board had voted to hire somebody else
mm-hmm.
and the president of the temple mm-hmm. and the three of us decided to overrule them. And they hired this other guy. It was really quite a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And Armand Cohen, we didn't have we had a neutral relationship. Armand was never a strong force vis-a-vis Federation. As I pointed out,
who are you referring to?
Armand Cohen. I'm sorry, not Armand Cohen. I'm talking about the current rabbi of
Jacobs.
Jacobs. Mm-hmm. Jacobs was never a strong supporter mm-hmm. of Federation. He pretty much followed in Friedhoff's footsteps. And his assistant rabbis also followed in his footsteps. In terms of his support. Now, in recent years, he's become, a gatherer, supportive in a neutral sort of way.
Mm.
He's not an activist to begin with. My relationship was satisfactory. I told you about the time when we went and asked him, when the assistant rabbi to be fired. I think that was during his regime. So the rest of the rabbis, there was one very strong Orthodox rabbi.
Landis.
Landis, there's another one.
Pupka.
I think we have more relationships with Landis and Pupka. Now, Landis was a very sweet guy, okay? He was kind of well-liked by Federation. He would fight for Jewish education, so Pupka was a strong-minded, tough guy. And, you know, he was particularly, came to Jewish education, Soviet Jewry in those days, didn't get to be popular for the early years. And then there were rumors about Pupka in terms of some of them. I don't even remember what it was. Oh, something in New York, because there was some relationship he had in New York. Somebody in New York who was indicted on something or another, whom he was a relative, but it never touched him particularly. So other than that, and the rabbis in Pittsburgh, contrary to Cleveland, were never forces in the Federation. For good or for bad. It was as if, and I really took my cue from the Federation. They were not members of the board. I think we may have had some tokenism there where we rotated boards around. But by and large, they were not, and I don't think they are today, factors in the communal work. And in a sense, that makes a very smooth going. If they're not in the opposition, it's ideal to have them in the way of what we see, but if they can't have that, it means here, they stayed in their particular framework. The only areas where we would occasionally have some problems, and I think it was mostly with Park Synagogue, and where the rabbi, Goldman, Beth Sholem Synagogue. The rabbi was Goldblum. There, while he was a very quiet, self-effacing person, he had leadership that was strong. And in some of the early years, Park was trying to be what a lot of conservative congregations tried to be, following the Mordecai Kaplan philosophy, the temple being the central source for the whole, for everything that went on. They should organize the Federation, they should do everything. There were complaints about the Jewish Community Center that really leisure time activities should be organized by the respective temples and synagogues. And for a while, they tried to compete with the center. They were having athletics and gyms, but they didn't prevail. And the Federation always, in a sense, backed the center. There was that fight, and that went on, and the rabbis tried to, in that particular area, come up. The rabbi didn't prevail. It was just this town, contrary to other towns, very lay dominated by lay people. And it, from my point of view, from the Federation's point of view, it made for a rather easy saving. You didn't have those other peripheral problems to worry about all the time.
It's interesting because now that they get 1 hour a week for the Orthodox, spring Orthodox to swim, because they won't swim.
For the other, really?
So now I think they're making more time.
That's different. It's not dark. That's a little concession.
Yeah, that's correct.
An hour.
But it's, so that's the way, and the center always had very strong leadership in this town, the Rogals. As a matter of fact, Al Rogal's father was president of the center. And his uncle, Jaime Rogal, very well known, very active in the center movement, Alvin
Rogals, who are they?
He became president of the Federation of Rogal Insurance.
Hyman, H-Y-M-A-N. Who was the other one you mentioned?
His father, I don't remember his father's name.
Uh-huh.
And then it was Jaime Rogal, who was his uncle.
And Alvin.
And they were always forces in the... and then there were, before I got here, there were the fights between the Kaufmans and the center. Eventually, we began to get a lot of money from the foundation in New York. Edgar Kaufman. There was a big, before I got here, a big fight between Edgar Kaufman and Jaime Rogal, the Democrats won. And then there was, when I was talking about the center and vignettes, a lot of the leadership in Pittsburgh, lay leadership, grew up in the old YMHA, which was the Belfield. I still call it the Belfield Y. And they wanted that to be the center of all center, of all Jewish community center activities. And there was another group that wanted the center to remain where it was on Belfield because it gave them a point of recognition in the Oakland community. So between these two factors, there was a pretty strong group. Harold Gondelman, a whole group of guys. I don't remember the name too much anymore. And when the Jewish center began to expand, on Squirrel Hill. They were vociferous. And they tried to prevail on Alvin Rogal. I think he was president of the Federation at the time. Slowed down that movement. But eventually they lashed out. But a lot of it was a matter of dispute. It didn't get to the point where people stopped talking to each other, or wouldn't give money anymore, that kind of thing. But it was a dispute, and eventually, of course, the final part of it was the sale of the building to the university. So, and at one time, there were all kinds of proposals to turn the Belfield Y, enlarge it, move the Federation over there, a lot of stuff. But it did not prevail. So that was the Jewish Community Center and the relationships. And of course, the Federation budgeted the center for several hundred thousand dollars. And because the leadership of the Federation, I could see that would be happening.
Where is that building on McKee? Do you know anything about it?
When I got there, it had just been built,
234
McKee.
Yeah.
It had just been built. And that's going to, as I understand it, that's going to stay there. They're going to build on top of it, North Federation. And I think Jewish Family Children's Service is going to move to the new campus that they developed. Plus other.
Who paid for that? The building.
The building with the Federation.
Yeah, I know. There wasn't anybody who bought
No, we didn't have anybody giving $2 million or naming the Federation.
Yeah.
So that was the Jewish Community Center and its activities. Now, the Federation was always, that's why I love working here, a very independent-minded body. It had its roots strongly in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to this day, the leadership of the Federation then is pretty much the leadership of the Federation today.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't left. Oh, they go to Florida, they do this, they do that, but they're still here.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say independent-minded, they didn't take the route that so many other communities like Cleveland did, but it's just barbarous, you know, of their people becoming national leaders of the United Jewish Appeal, American Jewish Congress, American Jewish Committee, I think finally, the guy whose father died in Egypt, Amos Comey, who was but they never, so they're independent.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came to budgeting the monies that we would raise, they always took the stance that the local community needs must be met before, you know, the money would go overseas. Now, a good part of the money went overseas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there were tremendous pressures from overseas groups, local Zionists here, national Zionists. The UJA particularly would come in and give you a formula and tell you what they wanted to do, and threaten if we didn't give them more money or a certain percentage, that they would organize their own campaigns and so forth. It's like these people that tried to take over the Federation and its money at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But it never prevailed, not in Pittsburgh. Matter of fact, Cleveland too, the same way. They were also very strong locally minded. And that made for good, healthy relationships, even though the overseas people were, you know, mildly upset. And, you know, particularly when we had special campaigns during the wars. But those special campaigns always had a second line just for overseas, so it worked out. It worked out. So we are very independent-minded group. There was one agency, and we talked about Montefiore, there was always big battles.
Yeah.
But that was also tokenism. There were people that said, what are we wasting $250,000 a year for? The token. And then just as much another group that said, look, it's worth it to keep our finger.
Yeah.
And it was, at least to influence what would happen with at least worth getting some of the money. One of the agencies that we dealt with in the early years, very difficult agency, contrary to Shano, was the Home for Agency. Home for Aged in the early years, while nominally part of the Federation, would thumb its nose mostly at the Federation. They ran their own show. They didn't need money from us because they got most of their money from the state. And they did things that a lot of us felt badly about. They had a small group of guys that would meet and decide who gets in, who doesn't get in. Who should get interviewed? People that didn't have money, sometimes they didn't get in touch with them.
Mm-hmm.
Children didn't have money. It was really, from that point of view, poorly run. That went on for a few years, and then suddenly the bottom dropped out from out under the home. And that was run by a group of guys who, I guess, thought that they were doing the right thing, and they were Joe Rubenstein and Harry Kamen.
Harry Kamen. Yeah.
Particularly Harry King.
Yeah.
And there would be meetings all the time and so forth and so on, but lip service. But finally they came to the end of their rainbow, and they were suddenly short by hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they had to come to Federation for a grant. And before they could get that grant, they had to agree to a special committee there of the Federation that would take a look into the
operation. What year was that? Probably about 20 years ago.
Look into their operation, make some changes. And so that did happen. Change the executive, the board, which was a self-perpetuating board. I think we put five or six people on the board of the Federation. So that finally eased itself up. Now, during my regime particularly, also, we built, with government money, the Riverview.
Mm-hmm.
Those ran very, very well. I understand in recent years there was some...
Riverview apartment.
Yeah, apartments. In recent years,
mm-hmm.
There were some problems, there were some inspections.
Didn't
do too well. Take a look at it. In the earlier years, it was really a godsend to a lot of people. The fighting that went on to get on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Because those were wonderful places.
Still,
you know, for a living, relatively inexpensive, subsidized partially by the government.
Yeah.
And for people that are well, or relatively well, it could be nicer.
Mm-hmm.
It's like some high grade places I'm familiar with, like in Florida, where similar, which are enormously expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Here you have everything available.
Yeah, Detroit has one that outclasses that by a lot.
I don't know what happened to them in recent years. The executive administration was poor, but they got some bad rats.
The hospital more than the apartments. Wasn't it the...
You're talking about the home itself?
Wasn't it the home?
I guess not the Riverview.
Because
they were all part of one complex, but it was the home itself.
It was the home itself that got the bad.
Which was a result of all these bad years of poor administration.
Stanley, who was the executive there?
Oh.
It was during your time.
Oh, during my time.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Okay.
And Goldberg was in the hospital. Whoever was there was pretty much under the thumb of Harry Caiman.
Harry Caiman, that's right.
Did whatever they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You would always say, I can't do it. Yeah. Tell me what to do. So that was, then Jewish Family and Children's Service was a very well-run institution. Had a very good executive.
Name?
I don't know, what's the name of the executive of the Jewish Family Children's Service?
What?
Jewish Family Children's Service?
Name?
The executive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nate could. Thank you. She's my memory.
What about him?
Oh, just a good executive, high grade. He brought in, worked with the Gusky Clinic. He brought in therapists like Norman Crush. I think he just left there.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a nice job. Mm-hmm. Highly professional operation.
Mm-hmm.
Highly professional.
Mm-hmm.
One very I'll tell the story. Unfortunate incident. I had joined this country club, and he decided he wanted to be a member of the club. The executive wanted to be a member of the country club. Yeah. So he applied. He didn't ask for any special treatment. And I think he joined.
Mm-hmm.
But he got into a terrible hassle with one of the board people who was also a member, because he, I guess, wanted to work it out so that, like a businessman, they would pay
mm-hmm.
so he could take a deduction or something.
Mm-hmm.
Such a terrible thing, I guess, in social work circles. So they gave him a lot of hell for that. The reason this person gave him the hell, and I just won't mention it, because he's very active today. The reason he gave him such hell was that at a meeting in New Orleans, a meeting of the National Federations, and a lot of the agency people would come, and this person was there at the time, and she was a very ambitious person, and he was the executive, and there were no room. I was there, although I didn't tell me to bump into her later. He said, this person came over to him and said, what do you think, Nate? Think I'd make a good president? And he said, no. That's not the thing you say. No matter what you say, he said, well, probably terrible thing, and she never let him go. Never. How could she say that? She said she's a big lousy president. I said, of course. And you could be instrumental in seeing to it that she never became president. You didn't have to tell it to his face. Just like this guy that wanted to be campaign chairman.
Yeah.
But it was a good agency. And that leaves the education agency.
Yeah. I want to hear about...
what's his name?
Isidore and...
Abrams.
And the other school.
School of School of
Advanced Jewish Studies, yes. What's his name?
Rabbi.
I know.
What's the name of the rabbi? School of Advanced Jewish Studies. His wife stops us on the street all the time. God, I love that. Yeah, Aaron Kessler.
Yeah.
Well, you're on the ball today, honey. You do pretty well.
Aaron Kessler. Let's talk about Aaron. Schooler.
Yeah. Well, he was probably my bitterest enemy for a long time. We went at each other.